Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Barbara Jean Lindsay is an internationally acclaimed psychic, spiritual healer, author, and founder of the online mystery school Esoteric University. As the cosmic oracle, she is a conduit to the powers that be to answer your questions about your future self, past lives, current career, love. She shines light into the darkness to illuminate what was, what may be, and beyond. The readings and advice given by Barbara Jean Lindsay are for entertainment purposes only, should not take the place of any medical, legal, or financial advice given to you by a qualified professional, and are not a substitute for medical, legal, or financial advice. If you need a doctor, call a doctor. If you need to be expanded, call the Cosmic Oracle.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Oracle Show. It's our last show of the year. Can you believe that? We're wrapping up 2023. I'm your host, Barbara Jean Lindsay, and I'm honored to be here with our co-host, Steve Colburn. I don't see you, Steve. Where'd you go?
I'm right here.
I don't know. Let me see where you are. For some reason, Hello. It's not showing you on the Facebook screen, so let's make sure I have a view.
I see myself on this end.
Speaker. Oh, there. You weren't speaking. You have to talk, and then we see you. So I'm going to change that. So we're both on the, we're both there. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah.
Yes, we can both talk. All right.
About the same on my end, but.
Okay. Yeah.
Hope you hear me.
Yeah. So welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. How's it feel to be like our last show of the year? You're just kind of getting into being a host, right?
Yeah, well, it seemed like the year just started, so. now it's been easy, so time has speeded up.
Right.
At least subjectively speaking.
Right, and you've signed up for the next year, possibly, as being a co-host? So you're going to be a regular co-host here on the Cosmic Oracle Show?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm so excited for that.
I signed an exclusive contract with you.
Well, I really appreciate that. I really do. I'm sure all of our listeners really appreciate that as well. It's going to be a really good year in 2024. And so, can they reach you at 805 625 2549?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, yeah. Great.
I'm going to make the appointment first, can or if they have information for me, they can call me on that number.
Right, great. And we'll talk about that a little bit as we go along. Also, thank you for supporting my work. You can go to BarbaraJeanLindsay.com and book a reading. Readings are real popular in January, so we can kind of look a futuristic look at what the year is going to bring to you. I'd be happy to give you a reading. I have classes starting in January. January 24th, I have a transmediumship class that I'm going to be teaching for the first time. I'm really excited about teaching that. And then finishing up a level 2 class and starting a level 1 class. So if you're interested in developing your own innate psychic abilities, and we all have them, I really appreciate being your teacher. And I'm sure I could teach you something that would help you really make those instincts real and in the meantime, give you a really more life of vitality and joy and love and laughter as well. So it's just a little tool that can help you be protected in a harsh world. So check out BarbaraJeanLindsay.com or give me a Facebook. You can reach me here on Facebook at Barbara Jean Lindsay or Cosmic Oracle Show. And leave your phone number or leave a message for me. Thank you for being here and giving so generously to Revolution Radio. We're an all-volunteer station, so that means no one gets paid. And we're only here thanks to your donations. And so you can go directly to freedomslips.com. That's Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And give whatever you can, $5, $10, to keep us on the air. Today is December 29th, 2023. And I want to dedicate today's show to our wonderful feral hippie on Revolution Radio. She was an amazing Mona Radler, and her show was Feral Hippie. And she was on the show for, I think, about 10 years here on Revolution Radio, teaching to have a relationship with life and the world, and especially her all of the information she had on herbs and how to heal yourself. And we're really going to miss her. And she really gave a lot every week for 10 years. And so wherever you are, Mona, we know you're out in the on the earth, probably walking barefoot and having a basket full of flowers for remedies. So we'll always miss you and are thankful, grateful for your love and all the wisdom that you brought to Revolution Radio all of these years. And so we send our love and a love to her family, her daughter and her grandchildren as well. So today, December 29th. So we thought we would talk about, some of the things that happened in 2023 that were maybe, got some highlights, right? That got some press or got some things shaken up or some things moving in our UFO community. So do you want to start, Steve, with one that you think was important that happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, the events in the UFO community, I think, have remained pretty much unchanged for the last year or two. Like we were saying before on the air, sightings are reportedly up, but abductions are down. So that may indicate that the aliens have enough hybrids and class two experiencers and are preparing for some sort of endgame scenario, which that makes sense due to the fact that the government's now admitted as of a few years ago that UFOs are real and they're beyond our technology. And they didn't admit they were alien, but they said they were real and beyond our technology, which amounts to almost the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think there could be disclosure soon. I don't know if it'll be this year or not, but probably within the next few years, if it's not this year. And I think that the aliens are the ones pushing the agenda. I do not think the U.S. government would ever voluntarily disclose.
Oh, did I lose you?
I'm here.
There you are. Okay, I thought I lost you for a minute. Go ahead.
I said I didn't think the U.S. government would ever voluntarily disclose. So I think the aliens are driving this agenda for disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
They're heading for some sort of an endgame scenario, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think everyone's feeling that, right? Everyone's kind of feeling.
Most people I've talked to feel that.
Yeah, that something's going to happen. We don't know quite, but it's crackling in the room, shall we say. Things are getting revved up for sure. So, one of the things I found that most fascinating this last year, there was a congressional hearing as well, right? I forgot about that. I just remembered that. We could talk about that. But also the Mexican journalist and UFO researcher, and I let you say his name.
Jaime Maussan.
He's an investigative journalist in Mexico, and he presented alien bodies to Mexico's Congress and has had quite a background of other claims that he's worked over the years, right? And so he brought these beings, I think it was to the Congress, wasn't it? The Mexico Congress, if I remember right. And brought these alien beings out into the open. And we got a really close look at them. And it was very, very controversial and gave people a lot of things to talk about. But it's, I think there were so little. It was in September of 2023, and it caused quite a stir. And so some people... what do you think about it? What's your
were those ones that were found in Peru?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what to say because I was down at Jaime's place in 2013, and he had this being, or we thought it was a being at the time that looked like he thought it was a fairy of some kind, had bat wings and really creepy looking humanoid looking head and arms and legs, and we thought it was real, but it turned out that it was called together by with various animal parts, and it was a fake. So it was a very clever fake, and I think that in Mexico, in particular, you have to watch out for stuff like that because things like that are quite rampant in Mexico. But I'm not saying that the alien bodies from Peru are fake. I just don't know, but. Mm-hmm. I'd be highly cautious after what happened with probably before to get the real, but it would take some big gun genetic testing. Last time I saw him, he had actually done some preliminary genetic testing on those on one of those bodies, mummies, whatever they were, and it came out human. So whether that means that. They were cobbled together with human body tissues, or whether they're just closely related to humans remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea that they didn't. Someone else, a NASA reporter, said, "Hey, at least they didn't lock him away. We never got to see him again. At least we got to take a look at him, right? And put him out there." I guess what I'm thinking of when I want to see an alien up close, I don't. See them so little sometimes. I see them more, a lot bigger than what.
Yeah, I'm a little suspicious of them being that small.
It doesn't. But,
I don't know if they're. I just don't know if they're real or not at this point. I just wouldn't bet too much money on either way.
Yeah, and I know Stephen Greer had that little being once quite a few years back, and it caused quite a stir as well, but. I just always see them as our size or bigger, you know, 7 or 8 feet tall, or at least they have some substance to them in a height, baby. So
yeah, I mean, like the gray bodies that the government allegedly has are between 3.5 and 5.5 feet tall, and they're not, you know, tiny little things like that.
Yeah. I don't know. If I know that he, with his whole heart, and put a lot of time and energy and really says that they are. And I think he believes that what he showed the Congress was really true.
No, I mean, people have bagged on Jaime for years, but and said he was a fraud and all this stuff. And I know the man. I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. I think if he's guilty of anything, it's being a little gullible sometimes mm-hmm. about some of these things. But, I mean, anybody can get fooled with a deliberate hoax like that.
Yeah.
But I am not saying that these little bodies are a deliberate hoax. I just don't know at this point.
Right.
I'm just saying it's happened before.
Yeah. Well, and I thought there was quite a few other things. I know that you said, and I've seen some backing that sightings are up on the up, right, for this year. We have quite a few more sightings than...
Yeah, I've heard several reports that sightings are up, but abductions are down, so mm-hmm. whatever that's worth. Mm-hmm. And if true, that, like I said, that convinces me that, or tends to indicate that... the aliens have enough hybrids and they're working on some sort of an endgame scenario to disclose.
Mm-hmm. And when's that coming? And so it wasn't in...
I mean,
yeah.
Probably, you said it was this year and you made it right. I just don't know.
I don't know for sure either, but I get it on good, what would you call that? Good contacts or secure contacts that it's 2024. And then I have friends say 2026, but we know it's coming. And we were talking.
I read the other day that it's going to be by 2027. So,
oh, okay.
Who knows? But that sounds a little bit more reliable than predicting a specific year.
Yeah, I'm going for 2024. I don't know why, but I am, and so I'm going to stick with that. And you know, if it's tonight, would be great. Right now would be awesome. So.
Yeah.
I want it now. Yeah. And I think we are ready. You know, the whole thing is they're saying that we talked about this the other day, that it would affect religion and people would be freaking out too much. And we both disagree with that, correct?
Well, I think the government has a point in saying that people might panic. I think that from what I have observed, about 10% of the public, especially highly religious people, especially highly religious Protestants, might very well panic. But the thing is that people can only panic for so long, and then they have to get used to the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to do this sometime, why not now?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they should have just told people the truth from the get-go and avoided all of these trillions of dollars we spent keeping a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And missing out on all the alien technology. Part of the reason the government did this is because they want to keep the technology to themselves.
Right, you know, and so they can control
it. How would that be to have the technology to use for civilian use? Then, you know, ships powered by UFO anti-gravity drives and that were highly efficient, and flying cars and you know, all the Jetson type stuff.
Right.
Not super expensive.
Right. Well, we have Pinky Lee. Happy New Year, Pinky. Thanks for checking in. And you're one of our community that we look forward to seeing you every Friday as well. And Constance Victoria Briggs is here, our wonderful author and all that she brings to the table with her wonderful books that we have used for research ourselves. So welcome and happy New Year. So Constance Victoria Briggs asked, will they panic? Some, yes, but so many seem to not care. I am amazed at how many people are continuing to go about their business now knowing that we are not alone.
Well, that's really a phenomenon nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, people did care back in the 40s and 50s, back then, I think that a lot more than 10% of the population might have panicked if they'd said something about confirming all this. But now the percentage of people that would panic, in my opinion, is much lower, and a lot of people just don't care. I mean, I've met a lot of people that that, hey, you're probably right, but I've got bills to pay and the mortgages to take care of, and I just don't care. And I think that's a really strange attitude. That's kind of an ignorant attitude. And I don't know what's becoming of the human race, or, you know, human curiosity at that point.
Right. Constance Victoria Brick says, they are saying they have too many problems to worry about. I am astonished. Exclamation points, she writes. And she says, I can't think of anything more exciting.
Well, it's definitely the story of the main story of the 20th and 21st century, though people want to admit it or not. I just think it's too much. It's too much for some people, and there are a lot of problems right now. And I've met a lot of a few religious people that are the people that would panic if this were disclosed. And a lot of them admitted that after a debate that you're probably right, but I just can't go there. It's just not what I was taught, and it's too scary for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we were talking about this off camera. And like we do, and we talk about the subject a lot because it's one of our favorite subjects. And in that is that we've been acclimated generationally for this, you know, with all of our movies and television shows. Yeah. And
These major science fiction movies are definitely attempts by the government to acclimate people to this somewhat.
And so I'm trying to think of what other, well, we have Victoria has her books. She, you can put your book in the chat, Constance, if you would like. And her book was published this year. I know Chris Bledsoe's book just came out, UFO of God. I'm reading that now. It's about his story, and I like what he writes in there. I won't quote him, but that it's important that. People who have extraordinary experiences, that they write about them or talk about them, or at least get them out to the public. And I know he was ostracized from his whole community, but then it ended up coming back around, and it takes time. And I think we've all found that, those of us who've had some extraordinary experiences, and we get ostracized and out of our community made fun of and financially burdened from it, for sure. We were talking about that. But now, and then it all starts to come back around again after we start to work it within ourselves. Once we can grok it in our world and not go crazy or be able to walk in both worlds in a way, right? That that alien part of us and then that our Earth model part of us as well. So we get to do both. And so, and it's walking in balance, both of those. And I think the biggest thing I was thinking about that it's all about consciousness. I've never heard more talk about consciousness. It's all about raising our consciousness, keeping our vibrations high, being very mindful of our thoughts and our words. And that's been kind of new, a little more focus on that, I would say, for the last year. What do you think about that, Steve?
That we're focused on our thoughts and minds on the subject? Or?
No, on consciousness, that's going to take us somewhere. We're learning about consciousness and where that fits with us, you know? So.
Well, I think. More people are becoming spiritual and wanting to learn about consciousness, but there's not a lot of concrete data out there about it. We need to change that.
Yeah, it's a new frontier, isn't it? Definitely. But
well, it's a new old frontier. I mean, it's an old frontier, and people are newly interested in it again, and they're hampered by the fact that nothing's changed in consciousness research for 100 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
But that needs to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we're talking, there's a lot more talk about psychic and about remote viewing, and that's starting to kind of filter into the UFO community for sure, where it has a place there. It's science and consciousness, right? Or the science of consciousness, or
There's always been a correlation between UFO, ET, and psychic phenomenon and consciousness, because much of the alien technology is based on amplification of so-called psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm. And they look for that in a person, you were saying earlier, too, as a...
Oh, yeah, that's part of what they're looking for in their abductees is strong psychic abilities. Because humans have psychic power if they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or remote viewing being, I believe, one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we're kind of going and opening up that whole new arena. I'm excited about that part. And that always fascinates me. It has for years. So, you know, after we die, we lay down our skin dressing and we still exist. So it's where's that consciousness coming from, you know, and finding out our relationship with it and to it and all of it. So fascinating. Don't you think?
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. All of this is fascinating. But at least I think so.
Yeah, I do too. Well, so should we go on then? And that's the only things that I can remember. If any of our listeners can think of something that was important that we missed in our UFO community that needs to be set for 2023, can't really think of anything else offhand.
Well, on the political front, we've had more wars than ever before, mm-hmm. and the superpowers are acting really belligerent. I've never seen a major power act more aggressive than China has been lately.
Mm-hmm.
And people are making nuclear threats every 5 minutes. The Ukraine war is dragged into its second year. There's the war with Gaza going on with Israel right now. And China's threatening to invade Taiwan. Russia's threatening to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine. And things are just a mess right now.
They are. And
that might be why the aliens are coming.
Well,
if
indeed they are, so we can help, so we can't help ourselves, or they've given up on us helping ourselves, or they want to. I mean, we do know that they have closed bases where they have nuclear warheads, right? And
they've knocked nuclear missiles offline, mm-hmm. and. They've disabled nuclear warheads in storage, you know that. And there was an incident, and there have probably been many more incidents I don't know about, too, but there was also an incident in the Soviet Union back around the early 80s, I believe it was, where a missile silo on the Kamchatka Peninsula had the countdown for launch start, and they couldn't stop it.
Mm.
And with about 5 seconds to go, the aliens released control of the system and they stopped it. But I think that was designed to scare the heck out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so hopefully we can get it together and have a peaceful Earth. I still think if we dream it, we can make it happen. At least that's what they say. You can dream it into existence. You can manifest it. If we can dream a world of peace, why can't? I think
there's probably some truth to that. Yeah, I think so.
I want it really bad, really, really badly for this planet. And I think we can all come together and make that happen somehow, some way. So I'm a part of that. I'm up for that. So, okay, she goes, Celeste Basket says, they are here and monitoring nuclear weapons. Because those type weapons harm the world and the universe. That's right. With consciousness, you know, that's the thing about consciousness. Once you open up, you find that we're not the top of the food chain in a little bitty earth that rules everything, right? That it's quite the opposite. We're quite a little bitty speck.
We're in a quandary right now. I mean, nuclear weapons are not... are not totally an evil thing. I mean, because without them, we would have had World War III a long time ago. I'm convinced of it. Mm-hmm. And we're just in a quandary now where we could have war by accident or by madman or any number of things that would result in probably the entire world going up in smoke. Mm-hmm. In the absence of that happening, I do keep the peace.
Right. And I think it's not an accident that we are here at this time, at this moment in time, to hold that peace. I think it's part of our work as the peaceful warriors. When the peaceful warriors come, you know, the rainbow warriors, shall we say, from the First Nations are those that come from all types of walks and backgrounds of the planet that come together for peace on the planet and to make that happen now so that we can join a bigger model, right? A bigger dream, right? And that is to be off planet. And that would be like Elon Musk did a lot of work this year. He had his first missile, right? His first trip to Mars. Do you know the background on that, Steve?
Well, he's planning on sending people to Mars, but mm-hmm. as far as I know, he hasn't sent any spacecraft to Mars. So, yeah, he sent on the first Falcon Heavy launch, he sent his Tesla Roadster with a dummy and a spacesuit on board out to the orbit of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's landed any spacecraft on Mars yet.
Yeah.
NASA's landed several rovers on Mars, and three of which are still operating.
Right, right. So it's starting, if you were going to make a prediction, when do you think we would be, like, really having a real stronghold or a place off planet?
I think Musk is probably going to have people on Mars by 2030,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe sooner.
Mm-hmm.
As far as NASA ever doing it, I'm not sure. They're planning on sending people back to the moon, but I'd be surprised if NASA ever sent people to Mars. I just don't think they're up to it. I think they're more of an organization that's designed to send prototype unmanned probes to the planet rather than do manned missions. With lately, they don't have such a great track record doing manned missions.
Right.
SpaceX is much better. And I think SpaceX is going to be the wave of the future in space exploration, at least on the manned front.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on a business front, right? Like a small businessman, you know.
Well, I mean, their rockets already are way more cost effective than the ones put out by the major launch providers.
Right.
I mean, they were just kind of sucking on the government teeth for a long time. And didn't have any incentive to cut costs whatsoever. And here Musk comes and builds boosters that are probably a fifth the price of what they're building and even reusing the first stages. And that's been a long time coming. People have been saying they're going to do that for years, and they just never have because there was no incentive to because the government was paying for everything. But I think the days of people paying $250 million per launch are over, and people want more reasonably priced access to space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, I like it. I would go in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, I think that when Starship gets completed, that's going to be a license to print money, basically. He's going to be able to send people to the moon, to Mars, and even send people to other parts of the Earth in like 45 minutes. And a lot of people would pay a fortune to be able to get to their destination that fast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there should be some changes in technology. We did not get our med beds this year that everyone had talked about so much, right? Or what do you call them instead of a med bed?
In science fiction, they're usually called autodoc.
An autodoc. So
automatic
no,
doctor.
Right. So no automatic doctors for us this year. No med beds. no big cures for cancer or...
They've had cures for cancer for years. They're just recently mm-hmm. surprised. They want expensive treatments for cancer. They keep you alive no longer than 5 years. They don't want cheap cures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A guy named Hippocrates, for example, had an herbal cure for cancer back in the 50s that often worked, and he was hounded out of the country. He was arrested over 100 times, they said.
Wow.
And he'd always get off because his patients would testify for him and said it worked, but he was finally hounded out of the country and had to set up a clinic in Mexico.
Wow. Well, and I know a dear friend of mine, John Yost, is still working, slaying cancer himself. So, and he's a wonderful producer and of a wonderful UFO movie that was out this year. And so we send some love and blessings and healing to John Yost as well. And we had him on the show this year. And I just hope that he's doing good.
That's been the paradigm for a lot of things in the pharmaceutical industry, actually, that they want expensive treatments, not cheap cures.
Mm-hmm.
They want people to be sick and tired and addicted to their prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They're more immoral than illegal drug dealers, if you ask me.
Well, some things are changing, though, right?
Yeah, I think people are starting to get onto this and are focusing more on alternative medicine and herbs and vitamins.
Yeah.
I think the truth is that we don't need any pharmaceuticals. There's an herb for every occasion on the planet. God is a supreme being, or whatever people want to call him, has put everything that we need pharmaceutically on this planet already, pre-made. And all we have to do is find it and characterize it.
Mm-hmm.
And the pharmaceutical industry doesn't want to deal with herbs because they can't be patented and they can't make billions of dollars on them.
Right. And that gives us so much power and strength ourselves, right, if we can heal ourselves.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They don't want people to have the power to heal themselves either. They want some big monolithic medical establishment having the power of life and death over you, basically.
Well, that means they're doing their job, right?
Well, they may be doing their job, but their job is to the detriment of the American people and the people of the world, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They should not be allowed to do this. They should be constrained to a reasonable profit margin, and they should be forced to concentrate on saving lives rather than just making money.
Right.
That is what's wrong with the healthcare system in this country, is allowed in this country to be run as a whatever the market will bear, profit-making venture, and that's just not the right paradigm for something like this that everybody needs.
No. Well, if we could come up with I think that's happening a lot, though, in 2023, things that weren't working, some chaos for sure, and then the breakdown of structures so that we can create something new and better and more humane and maybe coming from a heart center instead of a money center? How would that be?
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, I don't regret these people a tidy profit in the least, but mm-hmm. when people charge like 100 to 1,000 times more than it costs them to make the object or product, then there's something wrong there, especially when people need that to save their lives.
Right. Well, it's all about education, becoming aware, and then my favorite word, take action. That's two words, take action. So that'll be
there's a lot of people that are down on Mr. Trump, I applauded him for addressing things that I've complained about for years. It's the high cost of pharmaceutical drugs being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He realized this, that they were charging way too much, and took some action to try to curb that. Most other politicians are all paid off, and they're not going to touch the pharmaceutical industry.
Right. Oh, I just lost. Well, it's something to think about and something to definitely, before we go on to wormhole theory, I know everyone's waiting for that. What about, I know that you take a lot of vitamins. I take a lot of vitamins. And why is that?
Well, because the animal studies indicate that that they extend lifespan and increase the amount of productive life and decrease the incidence of chronic disease like cancer and heart disease. Like, for example, heart disease, human cell heart disease is mainly clinical vitamin C deficiency. Only animals that don't make their own vitamin C, like humans and guinea pigs, for example, get human cell heart disease. Mm-hmm. So, my own opinion is basically if you take so-called mega doses of vitamin C all your life, maybe like 3 or 4 grams a day, for example, it's about how much you need for optimum health, I have reason to believe, and get certain other antioxidants like vitamin E, it's highly unlikely you're going to get heart disease. And especially if you stay away from fried food and trans fats, which cause most of it. Saturated fats are not the problem. I mean, that's a bit of disinformation that the pharmaceutical industry has put out.
Well, thanks for that. I just, you know, we do all the things that we can that are in our power to make us feel better, right? If you feel better in your body and you feel strong and you feel clear in thinking, then you can take action, right? But if you're in pain and suffering and you're in worry and fear and gosh, it starts weighing down and weighing down, and then you don't see anything but, you know, but trying to make it through the day the best you can.
Well, without your health, you don't have anything. And it seems like the government and the powers to be in general are trying to make people sick and tired lately. And with the bad food, the bad drugs, the chemtrails, and various types of pollution. And some people say they've been spreading cancer viruses around. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. And this COVID thing, I mean, that was a lab leak of some kind. I think it was deliberately spread, but be that as it may, I mean, that's one example of what's been going on that's making people more and more ill.
Well, we can combat that with meditation too, clears the mind and brings up the energy, and then with vitamins and walks in nature always helps. It puts you in a automatic fifth dimension and a way to release pain and anxiety. And, you know, sometimes a good scream is all you need, you know, or like to go break things and then you feel a lot better. So without further ado, let's talk about wormholes, shall we? I'll tell you the definition I have, and then I know this is, you've been wanting to speak about this, and I'm really excited to hear it from you. So do you want me to say what I see as a definition of it, or do you want to start with what a wormhole is, Steve?
No, go ahead.
Okay, a wormhole is a hypothetical structure connecting disparate points in space-time and is based on a special solution of the Einstein field equations. A wormhole can be visualized as a tunnel with two ends at separate points in space-time. That means different locations and different points in time or both. So that's what they say. So
that's about right. One thing is that wormholes are, according to the equations, also unstable. And that's what I've understood as well. in theory, they can be stabilized by negative energy on the outer rim of the entrance and exit to the wormhole. Mm-hmm. And that might be accomplished someday. In fact, I think the aliens have that technology. I have reason to believe they have like a cosmic subway system of created and stabilized wormholes. And they can also go faster than light by creating a wormhole temporarily, going through it, going a few million kilometers, and then getting through it before it collapses, and then doing it again. Mm. I think you can create them by using gravity beams at sufficient power. And the universal structure is such that it's hard to really explain, but I think we're a bubble, and we're in a fluid of space-time continuum that is composed of particles that are something like 10 to the 20th times smaller than an atomic nucleus, with a magnetic and electric dipole moment, and they interact with each other a lot more stronger than they interact with subatomic particles. Subatomic particles are huge compared to them, and the charge differential they would interact by is milder with a subatomic particle than with a space-time particle. And there's a liquid phase and a gas phase to the space-time continuum. And the liquid phase is billions of times denser, and the speed of light is millions of times lower in the liquid phase than in the gas phase. Mm-hmm. And in the gas phase, you could refer to as hyperspace, and the universe is a bubble of gas phase ether, or continuum, in the liquid phase. Mm-hmm. And we're stuck on the surface, mm-hmm, by a surface tension of that interface between the liquid and the gas. And the speed of light is the normal speed of light at the interface, but in the liquid phase, it's only a few meters per second. And in theory, the surface of a black hole is the interface between the gas phase and the liquid phase. And in theory, in Einstein's theory, the speed of light drops to zero at the event horizon in the surface of a black hole. I submit that it does not drop to zero. It drops to a few meters per second. Mm-hmm. Whenever you get zero or infinity in calculation like that, there's a problem.
Yeah.
These are never zero or infinity in real life. Mm-hmm. In Einstein's theory, they've made a big deal about a so-called singularity at the core of a black hole, and that supposedly has infinite density. I would submit that those don't even exist at all. It's just a figment of the equation. Hmm. It's space-time continuum itself that provides mass to the black hole. And black holes are stable, but wormholes are not. And a black hole can be thought of as a portal between the interface that we're on and the liquid phase of the ether. And a wormhole can be thought of as a portal between the interface in one position and the interface in another position through hyperspace, through the gas phase. Mm-hmm. You go in there, and the speed of light is billions of times faster, so you would almost instantaneously traverse the wormhole and come out the other side. Mm-hmm. And it can be at a different time as well as different spaces, like you said.
Mm-hmm. And have we actually done this, or is it just theory?
It's just theory, and I'm combining theory with what I believe the aliens have told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I'm correct. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing about singularities of black holes, for example, I mean, that's been debated about for years, and mm-hmm, nobody's ever even proposed any method to find out if they exist, let alone whether they do or not. I submit they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
They just a figment of the equations. I mean, in theory, you could explain a black hole with one tiny point at the center with infinite density, but you could also explain it by saying that the entire continuum has mass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a much more dense continuum than at the interface or the gas phase of ether.
So for space,
I'm using ether and space and continuum fabric interchangeably here.
Right. And so So we couldn't go through time travel using a wormhole, but we could go through it using a black hole. Am I getting that right?
No, you could if you had a stable wormhole, mm-hmm. You could in theory take one entrance of the wormhole and move it near the speed of light, and the time rate would be slower, and you would then depending on how far you went, perhaps travel a few hours or a few minutes back into the past, mm-hmm. Traversing the wormhole from one entrance to the other.
Hmm.
And that's one method. And the other method is that if you have an ultra-dense rotating object, a neutron star or a black hole, there's a phenomenon called frame dragging that Einstein talked about, where the gravitational field of the star or ultra-dense object actually drags the space-time continuum around with it. And if you have the right rotation rate and the right gravitational field strength, you can have areas close to the ultra-dense object that where time travels backwards. Huh. And if you orbited the black hole or neutron star opposite the direction of the rotation and got close enough to it, you would go back in time in theory. And the opposite would occur if you went the opposite direction, and you go forward in time.
Huh. Do we have, like, I want to be there on January 3rd, 1937, or I want to be there in 2028 on June 16th at 3 p.m.?
I don't think it would be that accurate. I mean, the mm-hmm. aliens told me that they don't like to use, they've had time travel for a long time. They don't like to use it unless they have to, because they're fanatics on 10 decimal point accuracy, and it's difficult to say when you're exactly what time you're going to come out to within a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes more than that with time travel.
Right.
And you don't want to do jumps too far ahead or too far back, because there's a chance that you would end up on another timeline and find it difficult to get back. There's timeline branchings all over the place. Right.
Well, and so would there be two of us then? Would there be the one of us that's here on Earth having this experience, or on a timeline through time travel, having that experience there at that time? So
yeah, I believe there are. I think mm-hmm. there are different versions of us on different timelines.
Mm-hmm. I think because of having the NDE, that's what happened to me. Some of my energy was here in this body on this timeline, but also my consciousness, and I was fully present outside of my body, just with consciousness. Not, you know, and maybe I went through a wormhole, but in the NDE, you know, I went somehow, some way to another location. So I was bilocating at the time. So it's kind of like, is it like a bilocation or what?
Not really. It's like mm-hmm. it's like there are individual separate beings that are like you, but different decisions that were made on that person's timeline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all interesting. I just love everything about it. Celeste Basket says her NDE was similar. Yeah, and I'm thinking of that too, Celeste, is that I'm mostly back on this timeline, right here, right now, in present time, but also there's that part of me that's still on the other side. And so I can go back there and kind of go back and forth, not at will, but I can work with that. I think that opened up my psyche, so I'm able to do that. So I would think going through a time travel or through a wormhole or through a dark hole, it would change your psyche. It would have to expand you and open you up. When you came back from that experience, you would have to be different, right, Steve? Do you think so?
I would think so. You've experienced it, so you're the best person to comment on that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we are going on a break in just a couple of minutes. So I love that on the wormhole theory with time travel. If you have questions for Steve, you can ask him here in the comments on Facebook on the Cosmic Oracle Show. Just go to facebook.com/Cosmic Oracle, and you can ask Steve questions directly. And Celeste says, me too. I do stay balanced here from going back and forth. Yeah. Oh, that's good to hear. And so time travel and so wormholes. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about dark holes. Or do you, and we're going to be talking also about, there was something else, neutron stars, right?
Yeah, neutron stars. We can talk about that as well.
That would be fun. I come from it in a spiritual view because I'm not a scientist. Steve, you're a material scientist for over 20 years and you have your degree from UCLA. And is it material science? Is that?
Chemistry.
A degree in chemistry. So it's fun to have these different aspects and play with them and work with them. I really enjoy it because I learned so much.
Yeah, I enjoy it too.
Good. I hope our listeners, it sounds like they're having a good time. And for those listening to Revolution Radio, again, thank you for giving generously to Revolution Radio and just give whatever you can, $5 or $10. Hey, hi, Leslie Young. Happy New Year, Leslie. Yay. Nice to see you. Welcome to the show. Welcome to all of our listeners here on the Cosmic Oracle Show. All of our new friends and new listeners and all of our community that listens to the show tomorrow or the next day or the next day too. We have some changes coming in 2024. We are actually going to going over to YouTube. So we'll be having I have a Cosmic Oracle YouTube channel called the Cosmic Oracle, and Steve and I will be doing some really special shows on Cosmic Oracle show there. And we already have Mary Rodwell signed up to come on, and she is going to regress either Steve or I on the show. So I think that would be really fascinating, and that'll be coming hopefully towards the end of January. So, all right. So we're going to our break right now, and we'll be back at 6:04. So go get a drink of water, go do what you need to do, and we'll see you back here at the Cosmic Oracle Show at 6:04 with Steve Colburn and Barbara Jean Lindsay.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. On Studio B at freedomslips.com.
transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. Sorry about that. Hello and welcome back, everyone. I think that should do it. Hello. Hello and welcome back to the Cosmic Oracle Show. I'm your host, Barbara Jean Lindsay. This is our 10th year. Can you believe that? I can't believe that. 10 years of a weekly show. And we don't get paid for it. What are we doing, right? That's not American, is it? But it is, because it's our giveaway. And it's important to walk in balance, right? And for all the blessings and wonderful gifts I've been given, I like to walk in balance and give some things away. And so our show is our gift to you this evening, along with my co-host. Hi, Steve Colburn. Welcome back to the show. Yeah, we're giving it away, right? We're giving this away. So it's our gift.
Yeah.
And so I want to thank also all of the people that have checked in. Thank you for giving generously to Revolution Radio. Go to freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com. Give whatever you can, $5, $10, keep us on the air. And you can also find me on barbarajeanlindsay.com. Get a reading this year. I'd love to give you a reading. Contact me at barbarajeanlindsay.com. Check out Steve and his work, his wonderful work with implants. See if you have an alien implant within your body. I did. It's a life-changing when you have it checked out, because then there's no going back. This is real. You know, this isn't in my mind. and which is always, you know, there's something about it that when you, when Steve took the implant and I got to see it, the photo of it, it just, it does something to you. It makes it so real that you can't go back. You can't unthink it. So it has nothing to do with the mind because you have proof. Not that you need it at this point, but there's something about it that's, it's a game changer. It's a life changer. How do most of your people, Steve, react when they find out that they do have...
Well, they definitely react like their life has been changed, you know. And I was patient 15, and Dr. Leavitt's implant removal program, and I had a implant in my left second toe that he removed. And before he removed it, he gave me a prescription to get it x-rayed, and sent the prescription to give a copy of the film to the patient, and they did, and I couldn't wait to hold it up to the light and see if anything was there, and I knew something would be. But when I did see something there, that definitely changed my life forever. Like I tell everybody, it's a, there's a heck of a difference between strongly suspecting that something like this is happening to you and knowing for sure. And if you have proof, if you have physical evidence, it's really hard to deny at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and that some of them emit radio waves too. That's the one that kind of.
Oh yeah, they all emit radio waves once in a while. I mean, they're not always transmitting, but the majority of them emit radio waves mm-hmm. at least on some occasions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank, before we move on, I want to thank Leslie Young. It's great seeing you here in the chat. And thank you for the 200 stars. That's the first time we've gotten that. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it. Thanks to Angie Vukovic and having you come join us here. And she has her question. She says, can you check arterial, auric, and holographic implants or cords?
That's not really my field. That would be more Barbara's wheelhouse, I think. I just check for physical implants. I check for physical implant, the presence of physical implant, and the presence of alien dyes that are left behind in the body from recent abductions. And when I'm scanning for implants, if I get a metal detector hit combined with a Gauss meter hit, means that there's an object under your skin giving off a magnetic field, and it's almost certainly an alien implant at that point. And you confirm it by x-ray.
Right, confirmed by x-ray, that's right. And then you can determine if you want to take it out or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Angie, I mean, if you wanted to this evening, if you wanted to check yourself, you know, all you have to do is rub your hands together and open up your healing chakras in the middle of your hands and just rub your hands together really fast until you start having some heat, right? And then just take your hands and slowly bring them out and bring them out past your auric field, which is right now mine's pretty big. So I'm going to bring it in close around me, like around, about 3 feet around me. And so then I can clear it myself. I just kind of fluff up my auric field right in front of me. And if there's a hole or a cord, you're going to feel it, right? And then you can just clear it off. And the way you do that is you make your own energy, just rev up that third chakra. And you rev up your energy so it's equal to and then greater than that hole. And so you can just kind of patch it yourself. And you'll feel it. There's a static energy around your auric field. And you can feel it. It's real. And it takes a little practice. But sometimes it's good to just kind of clear your own auric field of any holes or of any cords, right? And I have all kinds of different ways that you can do it. Maybe we'll do, I have some mantras that you can say and like a blockage. Yeah, if you have a blockage in your, let's say in your chakras, we can clear that out, right? And so maybe we'll talk about that in our upcoming classes. I do teach this at my school. I do have a Cosmic Oracle psychic school where I teach all this sort of things. But you can feel it, right? You can feel the power in your hands. And then after you do it, you're going to want to wash your hands dry off your hands, wash your hands, dry off, and kind of turn your energy back to normal again. Okay. You don't want to be walking around healing everybody else's auric field. So once you turn the energy on and you clear yourself and you heal yourself, and then when it feels good, you'll know when it feels good that there's no blockages left, because your energy starts to become lighter and brighter and stronger and more vital. So you have a lot of energy, right? And so once you're done with that, go ahead and wash your hands. And then I like to clap my hands and say that healing is complete. And so it is, so that you don't walk around doing that all day. Okay. But I teach this in all my classes. But that's a little thing that should help you. And like a blockage, yeah, you should be able to clear that. And if you can't do it, get one of your friends that is a healer or a psychic and who knows about auras and knows about this sort of spiritual remedies, and have them do it for you. I know when I had my psychic school, we would exchange psychic healings with each other. So at the beginning of each class, we would rub our hands together, get real hot, bring our energy out, and then I would clear someone's auric field for them. And then they would turn around and clear my auric field. And so it was really good. And so your auric field is really tight around you. It feels really sweet, especially if you're going out into the world and you're doing some work. You want to walk out with a real strong auric field, okay? And like when you're doing like work tonight, if you're doing work in the public, you expand your auric field so everyone can connect with you. And then you can bring it in, clear it all off, kind of give yourself a wash, right? An auric wash. And so then you can be bright and shining like the star that you are. Okay. And speaking of stars, Steve Colburn is going to talk about, Steve has a business. It's called Star Neutron Technology. What's it called, Steve?
Neutron Star Nanotechnology.
Neutron Star Nanotechnology.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's based on neutron stars and your affinity for neutron stars?
I just like neutron stars, but the company has nothing to do with neutron stars per se right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly it's going to be a carbon nanotube nanoparticle company.
Oh, okay, right. I should put that in here on the comment. But a neutron star then, so... How is a neutron star formed? What is it? How's it formed? And take it from there and see what we do from there.
Well, they form in supernova explosions. Black holes and neutron stars both form in supernova explosions. And if core of the star that explodes is beyond about 5 solar masses, the lower limit's not really well known, but around 5 solar masses, then the core of the star will collapse into a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it was between 1.5 and 5 solar masses, it'll collapse into another exotic solar object called a neutron star. And a neutron star is basically a giant atomic nucleus where there's nuclear, it's made of nuclear matter. It's made of the same material that atomic nuclei are made out of, protons and neutrons, but there's so much pressure inside a neutron star that most of the protons have been jammed together with electrons to form neutrons. So there's a lot more neutrons than there are protons in a neutron star. And that's a very exotic form of matter. It's so dense that a teaspoon would weigh more than Mount Everest.
What? Wait, say that again?
It's so dense that a teaspoonful would weigh more than Mount Everest. I mean,
oh my God.
Ordinary matter is mostly empty space. I mean, the
right.
Mass of an ordinary atom is almost all concentrated in the nucleus. And the nucleus is like a fly in a football stadium.
Wow.
It's and the atom is mostly empty space in ordinary matter. So when you get gravitational compression to that extent, the electron shells get crushed out, and electrons get forced into protons and form neutrons, and you can get a giant ball of neutrons, basically, held together by the nuclear strong force. And material would be unstable if it weren't under a tremendous pressure. I'm not sure that the lower limit to the mass of a neutron star is known, but I think that that smaller piece, if a neutron star got scattered, any smaller pieces would be stable, but it's hard to say how big the piece would have to be for it to remain stable. Certainly, if it were smaller than a certain size, the neutrons would decay into protons and the material would fall apart. It would become ordinary matter after a while. Neutrons, by the way, for people who don't know nuclear physics, are unstable. I mean, free neutrons are unstable and they have a half-life of about 15 minutes. And they decay to a proton, an electron, and an antineutrino.
Are they like a little bitty, like a nuclear thermal reactor in the middle of them then, or?
Not really. I mean, it's a very dense ball of neutrons held together by the nuclear strong force, and it's an incredibly strong, dense material.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in some ways more unusual than black holes. Because there's an actual structure to them, and they have a very strong magnetic field too, and they often spin at very high rates because all the angular momentum of the core of the star that formed it is in this tiny object, only a few miles across. It goes from the core of the star goes from perhaps a million miles in diameter to a few miles in diameter when it forms a neutron star, and the magnetic field and the angular momentum are conserved, and so these things often have tremendous magnetic fields tremendously high rotation rates, and that leads to beams of particles being shot out, and there being a lot of disturbance in the space-time continuum near them. In theory, you could use those as portals through time as well.
Oh. Well, I was going to ask, can you see it with the naked eye like we see our regular stars, or?
No, they're too small and don't give off enough energy, but you can see them by their effect on the surrounding matter, as you can black holes.
Uh-huh.
Matter falling into a neutron star or a black hole heats up and gives off a lot of energy.
Right, that's what I'm seeing. It's like all this energy inside of it. It's like a little wham, 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 you know? It's
tremendous gravity. I mean, the surface gravity of a neutron star is millions of G's.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps more than that. I haven't reviewed it in a while, but it's tremendous, millions or billions of G's. And any matter that falls into that gravitational field is going to heat up and give off energy and give off even more energy when it hits the surface.
Mm-hmm. And so how are they important to us? What do they do? What's their purpose, and why and how is it important to us? Why should we know it? I know that's a very generalized question, but that's what I have for you.
Well, I'm not sure they're really directly applicable to life on Earth. However, they could be used as cosmic signposts. Each neutron star has a characteristic rotation rate and characteristic way in which the beam of particles shoots out. And it's been proposed that they could be used to navigate
interstellar. Oh, I like that. So once so am I saying that it's dying or it's exploding or?
No, they're stable. Once they form, they're pretty stable. They could absorb matter if they're in orbit around another star or in a field of matter of some kind where there's continuously sucking in matter. they'll eventually get big enough to collapse into a black hole. If they don't suck in matter, they're pretty stable.
Mm-hmm. And do they have any kind of, what kind of properties? They have platinum or gold or what's inside of them?
Well, they're beyond that. They're not any of the elements on the periodic table anymore. It's just a huge ball of neutrons, like a giant atomic nucleus.
Huh. And do they have certain colors, different colors, or?
I would imagine it's blue because material would tend to reflect the shortest wavelength of visible light. That would be blue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's anybody's guess, really. I mean, nobody's. You'd die if you got close enough to one to see that.
But if you're in your spaceship traveling out in space and you're on a voyage, then you could guide yourself. Oh, that's supernova number one. Do they have names?
They've named a lot of neutrons. They've discovered and named a lot of neutrons first.
Oh, that's very cool.
I think there's probably 40 or 50 in this stellar neighborhood.
Huh.
But they've discovered.
Oh, I love that. And so they stay kind of in that same place, but only for 15 minutes, did you say, or?
No, I'm saying the three neutrons that are outside a neutron star, the single neutrons are unstable and they have a half-life of about 15 minutes. They decay to a proton, an electron, and an antineutrino.
Mm-hmm.
But under the tremendous gravitational pressure of a neutron star, neutrons are stable and they don't decay.
And they don't decay, huh?
Yeah. If you put a pressure change at the reaction direction of a lot of things, I mean, if you put... in this case, if you put the neutron under enough pressure, it can't decay into a proton and electron anymore.
Have you seen one yourself?
No, I don't recall ever seeing one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The nearest one is several tens of light years away.
Right.
The nearest one we know about, at least. I mean, there might be some that are old and not rotating very fast and don't have much of a magnetic field. Those would be really hard to see.
Yeah. Well, some of the photos I've seen of them, they look like big, bright, colored diamonds in the sky. Kind of like a diamond engagement ring or something.
I would imagine a neutron star that had a strong magnetic field that was rotating and maybe had some matter falling onto the surface would look like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so how does a neutron star work then with nanotechnology? Does it?
It doesn't. It's just a name. I mean, I'm just attracted to them and thought it sounded high-tech and futuristic. So.
No, I love it. I love it. I bet we have so much to learn about them. When were they discovered? Do you know when? Have they been around forever? Yeah. And
I think they were discovered in the early 60s, but I'll have to research that.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I know Oppenheimer and his fellow scientists during the Manhattan Project conjectured that they may exist, mm-hmm. and turned out that they do. Same with black holes.
Mm-hmm.
And they also did a lot of research back then on the nuclear reactions that lead to the supernovas that create both black holes and neutron stars.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another thing is that I wanted to mention that if there really was a Big Bang, if the universe was created in a giant explosion, there may have been loci of tremendous pressure where neutron stars and black holes could have been created during the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
And neutron stars and black holes that are created now have to be a certain minimum size, but the ones that were created back then could be any size.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with black holes.
What is the average size?
Like I say, the neutron stars are between 1.5 and 5 solar masses, and black holes can be, black holes that are created in the here and now have to be at least 5 solar masses or greater.
Okay, when you say solar masses, how does that compare to feet?
Well, the mass of the sun.
oh, the mass of the sun. Because, you know, when you're talking about it, I was thinking as a healer, a lot of times when I'm doing healing work on people or for myself, you know, I use the rays of the sun as a energetic field to call upon, to bring in, to use, to do the healing work, right? But I'm thinking now I'm gonna the next time I do it, I'm gonna do it with a supernova, right? We could go out, collect that supernova energy, bring that in, and use that energy to clear. I bet it would clear what we were talking about earlier, Angie, you know, some holes or some blockages, right? It'd be interesting to work with that or play with that, I think.
Well, maybe so. I can't speak to that, but you would definitely have some powerful stuff there, I would think, using that energy.
Yeah,
supernovas are they're the end stage of very massive stars that that live fast and die hard, and they're usually at least stars that end in supernovas are usually at least 10-4 masses when they start out, and they only live a few million years and then explode, and they become the world's largest natural nuclear bomb at the end of their life cycle.
Right, that's where I was seeing the nuclear part then. That makes sense. Supernova.
Yeah. What happens is that in an ordinary star, hydrogen is fusing to helium, and that's what happens at first in these large stars, and the helium is denser, so it goes to the core of the star and forms its own inert core that's not undergoing fusion. And it eventually gets massive enough and collapses enough to raise the temperature enough to start fusing helium into carbon and oxygen.
Wow.
And then there's another shell that can form beyond that, a carbon-oxygen shell, and then that eventually gets hot enough to start fusing to sulfur and other elements. And that eventually gets dense enough to start fusing to iron. And iron's the end stage. That's the maximum on the curve of nuclear binding energy, and you can't get any more energy by fusing iron. Mm-hmm. It absorbs energy if you try to fuse iron. Okay. And so eventually, they think the temperature gets hot enough where the iron nuclei start to decompose from gamma photon decomposition, and then that reaction also absorbs energy instead of releasing it, and then all of a sudden, the star is at equilibrium based on the thermal pressure and the gravitational pressure. When they balance, it's at equilibrium. Then, but then if the center core of the star starts absorbing energy, the temperature drops precipitously. There's no more thermal pressure pushing out. Gravity starts to push it in and compress it. And there's a big gravitational wave in rushing toward center and pushes all these layers together and causes a tremendous increase in sudden increase in temperature, and there's a tremendous fusion reaction that just blows the star apart. Wow. And under the right conditions, the center will continue to collapse and form a neutron star or black hole. Mm-hmm. Depending on how massive the center is.
Mm-hmm. And so once they've formed and they're legitimized, shall we say, for a while, and each one's probably very different, what is the and they're probably all very different, maybe there's not even an answer, what's the normal average lifespan of a neutron star?
I don't think they would have a lifespan. I think they're stable. I mean, once they form, they should be there probably forever and absorb enough matter to turn into a black hole.
Okay. Oh, I love this. I love this. It's just, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I've always thought so too.
Yeah, and we're related to them. They're a part of us. So,
every element that's heavier than iron in the periodic table is created during supernovas, during what we call the R process, rapid neutron capture process in supernovas. And things like plutonium and californium and uranium are created in these explosions. Probably a lot of californium, and there's some reason to believe that there's a lot of californium created in supernova explosions, and it's logical to think that because of the decay chain that most of the uranium on Earth was once heavier elements, plutonium, californium, curium, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of uranium on Earth, and a lot of uranium and thorium get something like 20 times more abundant than gold. So, I mean, there must have been a supernova explosion right before the collapse of the polar nebula that gave rise to the planets here. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, and so are there a lot of elements in it that we don't have at all? Did I already ask that question?
There probably are. Mm-hmm. It's been conjectured that super heavy elements are created by the heaviest supernova, probably the ones closer to the center of the galaxy where the stars can be more massive. Element 115 being one of them. Mm-hmm. I think element 163 is conjectured to be another element in the so-called island of stability that Dr. Seaborg postulated. Mm-hmm. Element 115 would be the most stable one. That's the one that Bob Lazar was talking about. So the aliens use it to fuel some of their spacecraft.
Yeah. I'm thinking that too. How could we use it, right? It's a natural occurring supernova. So but you said it's so hot that a human couldn't really get close to it, right?
On a neutron star, but as far as the element 115, Lazar said that the aliens told the government, and this makes quite a bit of sense, that it's found naturally on many planets close to the center of the galaxy. It's stable or almost so. It's right in the center of the first island of stability that Seaborg postulated. There's supposed to be two. And the isotope plutonium-244 is like the outskirts of the first island of stability, and it has an 87 million year half-life where most plutonium isotopes have only a few thousand year half-life. Mm. Plutonium-239, the main fissionable isotope, has a 24,000 year half-life. And plutonium-244 has an 87 million year half-life, so that's conjectured to be the an outcropping of the first island of stability. Then element 115 is right in the middle of the island of stability, and there's supposed to be another island of stability based around element 160. Mm. I thought that was very interesting. Based on some particle accelerator experiments where they've made element 115. It seems like Lazar may have been correct. The heavier isotopes of element 115 get longer and longer lived, and the curve indicates that element 115 isotope 299 may be almost stable or almost stable. Mm. It's got a magic number of neutrons and a magic number of protons plus one. And those combinations confer a high degree of stability to a nucleus.
Well, and can it sustain life then at all? Do we know any kind of life?
Being a neutron star?
Yeah.
Actually, there was nobody knows, but I mean, actually, there was a science fiction novel written by the late Dr. Robert Forward. If people want to look it up, it's called Dragon's Egg. And he thought that nucleonic matter could be alive, and he postulated a life form called the Thela, an intelligent species called the Thela that lived on neutron stars. And I have no idea if it's possible or not, but it was an interesting story, an interesting concept. I recommend that people read it if they can get a hold of the book.
Yeah, I don't know if we can have, and it's by Robert Forward, you said?
Yeah, Dr. Robert Forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they have
He used to live a few blocks from here, actually.
Oh, yeah, they have it on Audible. So, It's an Audible audiobook, but I don't know if they have it in a regular book.
One of his other claims to fame is that he figured out that antimatter would be a viable source of power if you built a particle accelerator specifically designed to produce it.
I'm sorry, can you say that once more? It just went right over my head.
I said one of his other claims to fame was that he figured out that antimatter would be a viable source of power if you could, if you had a way to store it safely, and if you built a particle accelerator that was specifically designed to produce it rather than just to experiment.
In fact,
rumor has it that the old superconducting super collider in Texas that that Congress canceled was later completed by the Black Project military community and is now being used as a an antimatter production facility.
Well, you know why I'm saying that is because we talked about it before that a comet, you know, it has water on it possibly, right? Ice and that it could have life. It does have life on it and it could have brought life to this planet. Is how far-fetched then is that a supernova couldn't do the same thing?
It might. I mean, we just don't know about life because we don't know it. I mean, there's life as we know it, and there's some reason to believe there's life as we don't know it, too. Like, for example, an organism came down from space in the Kerala area of India in, I believe it was 2001, and look up the red rain of Kerala, and it turned out to be large cells, looked a lot like red blood cells, but they were very tough, and their optimum growth temperature is like 300 degrees Celsius, and they had protein, but no DNA. Hmm. So that's an example of life as we don't know it, I would say. it uses some other material other than DNA to store genetic information, apparently.
Hmm.
And which makes sense because at 300 degrees Celsius, DNA wouldn't survive anyway.
Yeah. And that book was called what? Red Rain?
It was a paper called The Red Rain of Kerala.
Oh, a paper, Red Rain of Kerala. Yeah. Like Kerala, like Kerala? Red Rain
K-E-R-A-L-A.
Of Kerala? Okay, let me get that.
It's a region in India.
Rain of, can you spell that again?
Kerala, I believe it's K-E-R-A-L-A.
K-E-R-A-L-A. All right. Red Rain of Kerala isn't the paper?
Yeah, and I believe Professor Godfrey Lewis wrote it.
By Professor Godfrey? And what's the last name?
Godfrey Lewis.
Lewis. Godfrey, let me...
He's at the University of Bombay.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind reading that. Bombay. All right. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds exciting. So when you read it, what did you think of it?
The paper?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was mind-blowing. I mean, he discovered this new form of life that probably came from space. There was... Reportedly, a large meteorite that exploded in the upper atmosphere a few days prior to this red rain occurring. So these organisms are probably living in the interiors of asteroids.
And inside that, so how could that help us or bring something to the table for us?
Well, it just tells us that there's other types of life out there besides the type that we're used to, I suppose. And that maybe that we've already seen that a lot on Earth, but also that life can exist in just about any environment you might care to name.
Mm-hmm. That we're much stronger than we realize. in some ways, and then take us out in nature and we freeze pretty easily too. You know, we don't have a big fur coat around
us.
Like I said,
I mean, it's been speculated that humans are not from Earth, just based on the fact that we're not all that well adapted to this planet.
Right. Well, and that we might just be walking, talking robots ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, adjusted for this planet. And if you lived on a neutron star, then, I mean, you'd have to have some protection, right? You'd have to have a pretty healthy astronaut suit, right?
That'd be a pretty tall order. I mean, you'd be talking, you know, a very high level of technology to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. But maybe they have a way of just, like, you know, what I'm getting is that they have a way of, if you're passing by in your ship, that you have a long arm that goes to it that can take some of it, like a sample, and bring it back, right? And use that for whatever, almost like for some kind of fusion of some sort. I have no idea.
I think any kind of an arm like that would have to be probably made of neutron or material to be strong enough. Mm-hmm. And not break from the gravitational and tidal forces put on it. Right. You're talking about the most hostile environment to human life you could possibly imagine. So mm-hmm. the neutron star would be thousands or even millions of degrees and mm-hmm. gravitational pull of at least millions of G's.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, because our Earth itself has a magnetic core, right? It has a...
Yeah, but you're talking a magnetic field billions of times stronger than the Earth.
Okay.
With the neutron star.
Okay.
I mean, the magnetic field itself could kill you without shielding of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Well, after time, do they ever cool down or do they get hotter?
I don't think they cool down. They cool down to a certain point, but I think that's an interesting point, actually, that no one's ever seen a... neutron star or a white dwarf or even a gas giant planet for that matter that's cooling down. I mean, they're all about the same temperature. Mm. So that implies that there's some energy source inside them, and right. There's reason to believe it's not nuclear. So I think what's happening is that matter is constantly changing some of the zero point energy around us into real energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. It really is. And here's another just a question I'll throw out there. And as this neutron star is evolving and growing and changing, like everything, that's something that doesn't change, right? So far in all of our knowingness, that it's kind of like let me see if I can find my words for it. That in the Earth, when she was evolving, there was all the volcanoes and the plasma, and at least that's how we think. And she starts to, how many millions of years did it take for her, right, to grow and become a sustainable planet? Is that a possibility that a neutron star would ever be a sustainable planet, or just not like
there's not for human life, for... Maybe if there's organisms like Dr. Forward postulated, made of nuclear material, that they could survive there. But life as we know it would be exceedingly hostile to. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any possibility that we could ever live there without some sort of, you know, million-year in advanced high-tech type of thing.
Yeah.
But you could be in orbit around it. That would be a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, oh yeah, yeah. And absorb the energy that way, right? For for energy. Ooh, I like that idea. I like that idea. And I'm just thinking, playing hide and seek behind it. You know, if you have another ship coming by, you can just hide behind it, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
I'm just playing. So
hey, you'd hide behind any kind of a planet or star, though, for that matter.
Right. It would be fun.
Yeah. So.
I bet it's just gloriously beautiful. Some of the photos that I've seen, I can't share them with anybody, but they are just gorgeous to look at, for sure.
The neutron stars?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I'd like to see those.
Yeah, they have some images of them. At least I think that's what they are. I put them up.
I didn't know that I said an image, but that's very interesting if they have been.
Well, let me see. This is where we need Sherry Ladd, because she would always find this stuff for us. Neutron star image. Images from NASA. Neutron stars. Here's this one. I can't show our people, but I'll send it to you on Messenger and tell me what you think.
All right.
So this is one from NASA. I'm just going to pop it in there. And you're right, it's very blue. Is that what you were thinking of?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it says, neutron stars are weird. NASA Universe Exploration. So that's interesting. So their magnetic field is interesting.
Yeah, the neutron has a magnetic moment, and if all the neutrons in a neutron star were oriented in the same direction, that would produce a tremendously powerful magnetic field. And I think what happens is that any remaining magnetic field of the star when it collapses is trapped inside the neutron star and aligns the magnetic fields of the individual neutrons.
Mm-hmm.
And these magnetic fields can be tremendous, billions, even trillions of times stronger than the Earth's field.
Hmm. Well, it's nice to know, because that there's so many other things out there that we are starting to explore these sorts of things and not just have our head and nose to the ground, right? We get to look up at the stars and not only see our stars that we're connected to, but beyond that are these amazing neutron stars and wormholes and dark holes, and it's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, and we have the James Webb Space Telescope now has been making some amazing discoveries. This infrared telescope that they put about 1 million miles out in space to get away from interference from the Earth.
Mm.
I would imagine our listeners have probably heard of that. If not, then that's what it is. That's a giant infrared telescope.
What's the name of it?
The James Webb Space Telescope.
Okay, let me see if I can get him a link for that.
It's the follow-on to the Hubble.
James.
The Hubble's still operational, too, by the way.
Oh.
Maybe not for much longer, but it still is.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've gotten so much from that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was definitely well worth the money. I think the James Webb Space Telescope is going to also turn out to be one of NASA's greatest projects.
Mm. Okay, so I'm going to put this in the link. That's not what we want. Oh, it's just called web.nasa.gov. So if you want to look it up and see, and it shows images of what they're finding. So that's cool. So yeah, you can just go to web.nasa.gov and they release pictures from the, did you say John Webb? James Webb. From James
Webb. Yeah, named after an old NASA administrator, James Webb.
Well, very good. Well, so that takes us out into the space as we know it, past, is it up to our galaxy or past our galaxy? Do we know? Is it?
As what?
As far as the James Webb, is it just within our galaxy here, right? Our Milky Way galaxy.
It's about a million miles out from Earth in one of the Earth's Lagrange points, is my understanding.
So we brought you from way out into the cosmos, our listeners and our friends and family on Revolution Radio and Facebook. So we brought you out way out into the cosmos, and we brought you among the supernovas and the wormholes and the black holes, and we've talked space travel, and hopefully we've stimulated you and given you some inspiration to find some research on your own and check it out and see where we go with all of this, because 2024 is going to be, I think, a stellar year. You know, I haven't used that word in a long time, stellar. A stellar year for us, for change and transformation and expanding our consciousness, right?
So
I think we just have a few minutes left and for this year. And do you have any last words you'd like to leave with our listeners for 2023, Steve Colburn?
Keep looking up.
Keep looking up. That's right.
Might see a UFO or maybe even a neutron star.
And I would say for me, keep looking in and exploring the inside, because that's an inside journey, and Steve takes you to the outside journey. And if we can balance the inside and the outside, we got it going, all going on. And so it's been a wonderful year and a very kind of scary year too, you know, a little bit out of control. But with COVID behind us finally, and we can move forward as humanity and explore new frontiers. You're the Trekkie. What do they say on Space Trek? It's explore new frontiers. I forget how it goes. Go boldly go where no one has gone.
Boldly go where no one has gone before.
Yeah, yeah. So we could boldly slay all negativity and create new pathways for love and healing and peace and harmony and new on your end new technologies, right?
Right.
You want to discover new planets and new technologies, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Speaking of planets, there probably is another large major planet still out there that's been discovered. And they're going to call it, Persephone if they do discover it. But the James Webb Space Telescope would be ideal for that, actually, because if it exists, it's so far from the sun, they've inferred its existence from its effect on the orbits of Uranus and Neptune. And if it exists so far from the sun, that you'd never see it by reflected light like most of the planets. So, an infrared telescope like the James Webb telescope would be ideal for discovering a planet like that.
Ooh.
Because it's going to be giving off heat, because all planets give off heat, so, but it's not much visible light.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exciting. So for a new planet, that is your vision for 2024, is that we discover a new planet with the James Webb telescope. I love that.
I don't know if they're going to discover it this year, but
that would be great.
I think that the James Webb Space Telescope, I predict, will discover it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
They'll probably have to do a concerted search, and they probably want to investigate some other stuff first, but I bet they have that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think we'll call that a show. And so Happy New Year to all of our listeners, to all of our friends, to all of our family, to all of our community here on Revolution Radio, and to all of our administrators who just work so hard. Much love, big love to you and your families. And to all of our listeners who show up on Facebook, and we'll be again going to doing some new things for 2024. And I know that Steve's going to be publishing his book, and I'm going to be publishing my books. We have two new books coming out by, hopefully by June. Is that what we were saying? Steve, we have to get on it.
Yeah.
And you can see us at Serpent Mound Eclipse Ceremony coming up in April 8th in Ohio. And then we'll both be at Contact in the Desert in June. And we're looking at a Sasquatch conference possibly in September. And we will let you know about that in January. So, and then Steve's available for implants anytime, anywhere, any place, within reason. and on the earth, probably. And to all of our star people and our star elders and family who listen to this show, big love to you. And thank you for your input and for your wisdom that you bring to the show as well. And I think that's it. I think just big love to everybody. And thank you for supporting us here at the Cosmic Oracle Show. And have a wonderful, wonderful Happy New Year. And we'll see you next year. How's that?
Sounds great.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much. Good night, Steve. Good night, Sandy.
Bye,
good night, everybody. Good night, all of you that brought so much, Leslie and Angie and Cindy and Pinky and, I hope I didn't miss anyone. Celeste and, oh, and where are you? Constance and everybody. Where is she? Jillian. All right. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Woo!
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives? But they'll never take our freedom!
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more.